This week on Snark Squad Pod, we are joined by Max from Well Done Books to discuss the HBO adaptation of My Brilliant Friend. Welcome back to Snark Squad Pod. I am your host, Nicole Sweeney, and I am joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host,
Letty Nis. Hi, everybody. And on this episode, we are joined by Max.
Hi, my name is Max, and you can find me on Instagram at Well Done Books. Thanks again for having me, you guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and thanks for coming back.
I know. Especially after the first round, I think that, you know, we had some pretty interesting discussions about a thing that you and I both love a lot, Max. So... coming back after that is, thank you. And we're here to talk about the HBO adaptation of the book that we talked about last time. So this is My Brilliant Friend. And I'm going to give a plot summary, but this is very faithful to the material. So the plot summary is essentially the same. It's a lot of people and a big cast of characters. So I'll go through kind of the basics of it. But Elena Greco is woken up in the middle of the night by a phone call from her best friend's son, reporting that his mother has been missing for 2 weeks. And this doesn't really surprise Lenu because her friend Leela has often talked about disappearing and kind of erasing herself from existence and leaving nothing behind. So Leno's answer to this is to basically write down their story. And that's what frames the narrative, is Lenu kind of revisiting how their friendship formed. And it starts in a small neighborhood in Naples. It's a bit of a poor neighborhood, and they're both in elementary school when they meet and they form a friendship. Leela and Lenu both excel in school. Lenu, because she's applied and she tries and she likes to please people, and Leela is something of a prodigy, so she teaches herself to read and write and later to learn languages and things like that. Their elementary school teacher wants them both to keep studying, but it's something that's not really done in these families in this poor neighborhood. Lenu is allowed to continue with her studies, but Leela has to go to work. So she goes to work with her father and her brother. And that's kind of the divide that exists between them, amongst other things. And like I said, there's a lot of other characters and a lot of drama going on in the neighborhood. But that's kind of what takes them apart and brings them back together, is that Lenu is studying and Leela is kind of involved in the happenings of the neighborhood. And as more of the men start to notice her, and as she grows up, the very rich and powerful Michele Solara wants to marry her, and Leela wants nothing to do with him. And this makes her family very angry because, again, he's rich and powerful. So in order to get out of that whole situation, Leela agrees to marry Stefano Caracci. And the first season ends with her wedding to Stefano. And we are left on kind of a cliffhanger that Caracci is probably in cahoots with the Solaras. And that leaves Leela kind of trapped in this marriage and super heartbroken. And that's the last of what we see. Good?
Yeah. So.
Well done.
Yes. Great.
It's a lot. There's a lot of people. There's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah. I didn't mention any other people besides like the main two characters, but... you know,
I had to do the book plot synopsis, and I feel like I did more or less the same thing. I was like, okay. There's all these other people, they're there, and they're important, but we're just going to talk about the two girls and what they get up to. So we are going to start this where we always start this. I know you guys both super love the books. How did you feel about this adaptation?
I loved it. No surprise there.
Oh, good.
I will say,
well, I wasn't sure. I think that is I shouldn't say a surprise. I think it was a fairly faithful adaptation, but you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's going to live in your feelings in the same way. So that's, I'm glad.
Yeah. I would say I grew to love it. Just like I felt with the first book, the first two-ish episodes gave me the same vibes that I got from the first quarter of the book, in that I can understand why people watching and or reading that part of the story would be kind of like, why do I care about this? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the point of this? But man, I have to say, like, it is so faithful to the first book, which was a positive and not a negative, but as I was watching, I was just like waiting for something to be so different or for it to go off the rails, but it didn't. And so I was always kind of watching it from the perspective of comparing it to the book. Uh-huh. So I can't say I loved it in the sense that it's just hard. I came with so many you know, so much baggage with the story and knowing it that I can't come to it the same way that somebody who's never heard of the story would experience the show. So I hope those types of viewers would love it as well. But I loved it for pretty much all the same reasons I loved the first book.
Right.
I also loved it. So my feelings with the series just continues to grow. I agree that the first two episodes were a bit of a struggle and a bit slower, like the beginning of this book is. Mm-hmm. I would say even up to episode 4 was a little bit on the slower side. From 4 to the end, it was a binge for me. I gathered them up before I was watching. So like through the end of the series, it was beautiful and just well-paced and well done. First half was a little slow. I think that even though it was faithful to the material and that, you know, there wasn't a lot of like interpretation or going off the rails, I feel like that there was something so much added by a visual representation of the story that I just got so much out of, and it changed some of my feelings about what I had read. It changed things for me. So it was a worthwhile experience. It wasn't just an adaptation for the sake of adaptation. I think that there was something there that you do get from seeing this in a visual medium. And I think that that's the basis of why I loved it so much, because it took something I already loved and added something extra. And it was just beautiful, well acted, great story. You guys knew I love the story going in, but I really, really enjoyed it.
I totally agree about this being something where there's like a ton added. So I also loved this. So that is that's like our baseline. Our baseline going into this conversation is everyone loved this thing. So that's going to be kind of interesting. Less you know, contentious, I guess, than the book episode was. I will also say that the book definitely grew in my feelings the more distance that I got from the experience of reading it. So there's that. But I also think that like watching this show also made the book grow in my feelings for reasons like what you were just saying, Mari. It's a very faithful adaptation, and it was different. It was meaningfully different. I said something at the end of the book episode about how I was looking forward to the show for the sake of getting out of Elena's head. And that's a little bit of it, but that feels really reductive, I think, in talking about what I think is like really interesting and unique and different about the experience of the book versus the experience of the show. The thing about this story is that it is, in a lot of ways, like, it's very intimate, you know, it's this girl's lived experience, but it's a lot of interpersonal stories of this neighborhood. And so in the book, you have one person's perspective on all of these intimate things. And the show took a much wider view of all of that. And not necessarily because it had to. It's like there are totally ways in the cinematography that you can make more of an effort to frame things from the perspective of a single character. And while this show did have the narration of older Elena woven throughout, all of the filming choices tended to still be much more, you know, third person, very intentionally, just, you know, this is what we're showing. We were watching Elena. We were not watching what she was watching, like, which is what you're doing in the book, you know? Right. You're experiencing, obviously, her perspective first and foremost, but like you're watching her, not what she's watching. So I think that was just really interesting as a perspective shift. And I think one of the most obvious ways that you see something just like meaningfully just like different and added, and not, this isn't something that is bad or wrong about either version or great about either version, whatever. Like, I think it's just really, really interesting to have the comparison. And that is like all of the violence. Elena, because she is living in it, is so casual about the violence in her neighborhood that like this, whereas this sort of third person perspective that you have of the violence as an audience member, it was like kind of shocking how like just how violent people in the neighborhood were, even though it was all the same shit that I had read in the book. And like, I knew it was there, but it was just like, in particular, watching Leela fly through the window was like, holy shit. And I don't know. So just stuff like that. I think it was just really, really interesting to watch it. And I think the show is genuinely very good on its own. But it was really cool to have the experience of being able to draw these comparisons and seeing what this perspective shift is doing to the same story. And I think that because of the intimacy of the story, having the perspective shift, I think that's part of why it benefits from this having multiple ways in, that like you having the experience of the novel and being really in Elena's head versus having kind of the more like third person-y view from the TV show, if that makes sense.
I kept thinking about how when we were talking about the last Game of Thrones book, Song of Ice and Fire book, we were talking about certain storylines that they scrapped and why we understood why they scrapped them, because you're taking this like sprawling massive world and like thousands of words and pages and like condensing it into a season. And I think that that's super interesting to look at kind of what happens on the flip side here, because you're taking a very narrow and intimate is a really good word for it, especially you see it almost in the sets and the settings, like it's a couple apartment buildings in this one neighborhood and you don't often escape from there outside of that kind of setting. So taking what we knew of like this just neighborhood and that like relationship between Lena and Lenu and expanding it and seeing how they adapted that and how they filled out the episodes, that was super interesting to me. And watching the pacing and the choices that they made and all of that and what they chose even to represent from Lenu's like a narration, like they had that whole scene with the bugs coming out of the vents, and she makes that comparison about it being like infesting the women of the neighborhood especially and making them angry, which is just a line in like Ella, and keep switching her names, they call her like 10 different things, it's just a line in Lenu's narration.
If you haven't read the book or watched the show and you're just listening to this episode, Elena and Lenu are the same person. Yes. Just so we're clear.
So Lenu just says this as part of her narration, but they chose to visually represent it. And so I think that, you know, seeing those pieces of what they decided to pull out of the narration and visually represent was super interesting. So yes, there is an added layer of like enjoying this as an adaptation, though I think it would stand alone just as a series.
Yeah, I was really fascinated after, well, two things I want to quickly ask is, how did you guys consume the show? And well, that's just the first thing, I guess. Like, I watched it week by week as it came out because I couldn't not wait to watch it every week. But I'm curious because I might have been texting Mari yesterday and been like, do you know how Nicole's feeling about the show? And she's like, I don't think she started yet. So I'm curious, like, did you binge watch this? Not to like throw you under the bus, but
I mean, yeah, I mostly binge watched it. So I watched it all over the course of this weekend. I watched the first episode and then I took a break because, as you mentioned at the beginning, it takes like a little bit of getting into, and not that I finished the first episode and I was like, wow, that was bad. It was just like, okay, I'm not like, I don't feel compelled forward. So I like, you know, stopped, watched some other stuff, and then came back to it. And I think I watched one and then two, took a short break after two, and then I watched 3 through 6 last night, and then I woke up and watched 7 and 8 today.
Okay. That's a lot of violence, it's, like you said, yes. To like zoom in one, yeah. Like 48-hour period.
I started kind of to watch it real time. Like, they were airing Sunday, Monday, so two episodes would come out in a week, and I think that Monday after the Sunday episode, I watched one. So I watched like the first two within the week that it was out, and then I kind of just was like, who am I? I don't watch things real time. And I watched the others. Like, I think I watched 3 on one day, 4 on another day. Well, 4 through 7 I binged, because after 4 I just couldn't stop watching. And then I saved the finale for just a couple days ago. So it was spread out. It wasn't necessarily a binge, but it wasn't real time either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pretty much watched every episode as it came out that night. Because, like I said, I literally can't not watch it when it comes out. But I was just curious, like, I was posting about it on Instagram and trying to gauge people's reactions, like, for people who had never read the book and just watched the show as a show. That was the one thing watching it. I was like, I just don't know how I would feel about the show if I had never read the source material. And I don't know the exact fact, but, like, it's either, like, the first or the second prime time like HBO show that's subtitled or like in another a foreign language show in the last like however many years. Like it's not a common thing to watch a show and commit that many hours to something that is completely subtitled. I don't mind that kind of stuff, but I know that it's obviously not going to be, you know, prime real estate for television to have a show in another language, but I'd be curious to see how people reacted to that, and then also like how people felt about the show not knowing anything about these characters or caring about them and how long it took them to get into it. And one person said that they had really fallen in love right away, which I thought was interesting. And another person said that it took them to like episode 4 or so, but then they were in it and they actually wanted to go read the book. And I was like, well, not that I'm a fan of skipping books, but like you pretty much don't have to read the first one because this is so on the money. But also I told them to keep to read it and then to continue with the series. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting because like you were saying, if you've never read the books and you're listening to this, you're like, who the heck is, even someone who's read the book 3 times and then like watched it very closely the first season, I still was trying to keep track of everybody. It was quite a feat. But they somehow did a good job of making all the important things like stand out. And even if you couldn't remember who was Enzo and who was, you know, Alfredo or whatever, you could kind of get the gist of the drama and the violence and how that impacted these girls' lives.
We remember Enzo. Because he was amazing. I loved Enzo.
I did love Enzo.
Unexpected favorite character, Enzo. Sweet, yes. Sweet bean Enzo, who I love. Precious cinnamon roll. Don't remember giving a shit about this character from the book, but after watching the show, I'm like, yes, Enzo is a precious cinnamon roll and I adore him.
Now you just need to read books 2 and 3 then, and 4, but now you'll really want to read the rest of the series.
Is there more Enzo awaiting? Yes.
There's Enzo content. Beautiful. Coming, don't worry.
Gorgeous. To this point though, about keeping track of everybody, I super loved the opening credits for the show, and it kind of reminded me of the fact that like the book begins with this giant, you know, index of like how everyone's related and stuff. So I loved the fact that they opened the show with those family photos. I thought that was really like a really interesting and clever way to I don't know, get across sort of the same point that beginning the book with that list does. That was just like an interesting and smart choice, and I loved it.
I loved it too, and I really liked how after the first 2 episodes it changes.
Yes.
Like every time it's slightly a little bit different. Like I liked that to your point, I enjoyed that it kind of set the tone, like this is a story about these 2 girls mostly, but also about all of these other characters in this neighborhood, and how it showed them in their either home or in their place of work, which is kind of a lot of what defines these characters, especially in the book. They're often listed as like their name and then their occupation.
Right.
So it just brought like the sort of mundane or like the normalcy of their lives. Like they work, they're, you know, just trying to make a living, but it was just aesthetically very cool to look at. They felt very true to the time, and that is kind of how I felt about the whole show. It just was stylistically it seemed very accurate and like it was recorded, you know, in the 50s, which was really cool. Or at least style wise, not like on camera.
Right.
Film. But except the wedding, which was really cool. Yeah, I really liked that credit and how that changed. But also in the later episodes, when it really stopped being about the families and more about this new generation, it kind of shot, I think it was only the later episodes that it showed pictures of like the girls in the car, or like Pasquale on his own in the work, like in his store. Like it
right.
showed the different characters kind of coming into their own, and focused less on the family lives and more on these teenagers who are kind of becoming the next generation.
I think I loved the opening credits as well. I loved the score. And mm-hmm. that kind of music that would crop up, the tinkly almost music that would come throughout the episode as well, kind of coming off of the opening credits. And the previouslys for me, I think, are probably some of my favorite things that happened in the show. So each of the episodes, I think each of them, but they start with a previously section, but it's all set to music with no dialogue, no
yes.
words, just music and images that did an amazing job of capturing what came before and the very emotional moments. And it wasn't only that there wasn't no sound, but all of the images that they used were of like still faces. It was like, you know, things like that. So it wasn't just that you saw mouths moving and no words, but that they were still, there were emotional, like kind of face captures and things of that nature. So it was really, really, really cool. I love the previouslys a lot. And it's, I don't know, not the only reason that I would rewatch, but I would love to go back and rewatch mostly to see the previouslys.
The previouslys were incredibly beautiful, and it's also just a super interesting choice for this show that is all in Italian, but is, like, you know, made by HBO. I mean, in collaboration with, I forget what it said at the beginning, but like European something. That I found that to be a super interesting choice because it's, you know, clearly catered towards its non-Italian speaking audience in that way, but without feeling like it was collapsing anything, you know, like it was communicating this is what was previously on, and it was very clear. I don't know. It was just such an interesting choice because it was beautiful, and it felt like, yep, this is the emotional impact of the last episode. That's correct. Well done previously. But also, like, with still being, I don't know, just aware, I guess, of the fact that a large chunk, perhaps the majority of the audience of this show doesn't speak Italian. And I don't know. I found that really interesting.
Another visual thing that I thought was really great, and I wanted to mention, kind of circling back around to my love of Enzo, but when they aged the characters up the way that they do it, it was a really interesting moment too, because it's almost like dreamlike in its quality, and it gives you kind of a tie because you know Enzo in the fruit cart, and so you see him with the fruit cart and you immediately understand that they're growing up, right? Time has moved forward.
Right.
And I loved that portion of it, and I loved the like dreamlike quality that it had as well.
That was such a smart and beautiful way of doing that. And yes, dreamlike. I absolutely loved that part.
Yeah, I think it even partially was a dream for Elena.
Yes.
And like when Leela holds her hand out, I think they use that a lot in the previews. And I was like, why is she looking right at the camera? But then when you see it in the context of the show, like it's her dream, and she kind of like, I think she looks in the car, or gets out of the car or something, and looks up, and it's like her best friend, and now is like a 16-year-old. And somehow, I mean, obviously they did a great job casting, but the fact that they could cast characters at a young and an older age that like matched so well, I thought it was amazing, even for some of the side characters, and like you would kind of immediately kind of know who falls in, you know, the friend group, who's who, and that Enzo part with him pushing the grocery cart was really cool. There was a lot of stylistic choices they made that I really enjoyed, and just to like jump around, I really liked the episode on the island just as a whole. That was probably my favorite episode.
Episode 6 is definitely the best episode.
The best.
One of the most beautiful, I mean, just beautiful filming. The first shot of her getting off of the boat, and like there's this medieval like island in the background, and I just was, and all the clothes and the cars, like getting out of their little neighborhood that's obviously also beautiful in its own way, kind of the griminess, but just showing all that. There's a part where she's riding on the patio, and it kind of does a like a 180 pan, and it's supposed to like be almost like a time lapse where she's still out there writing, and then the lady's like, you need to get out and go to the beach. Just these long shots that were really beautiful. It wasn't overly stylistic too, which I enjoyed. It wasn't gimmicky. It all served a purpose, which I think is pretty much true of every element of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, it's a very well pared down, like not pared down, but every choice is very deliberate. And when they do choose to kind of go outside of the bounds, like what you were saying about the bugs, and that was, it was only the one time that they kind of broke the realism of the show. It's a very gritty and realistic show, but that kind of shows that they were willing to take those choices and, you know, make something special. And I feel like that kind of was true throughout. And one thing that I really was impressed by was how they imbued so much meaning into the shoes, which is one thing I was kind of skeptical about when we were talking about it in the book episode, is like, how are they going to make this thing that's super boring, like it's just shoes, how are they going to make it mean so much to them like it does to us while we're reading it? And I don't even know how to like speak about how they did it, but they did. Like by the end of the last episode, and even into like the, I think it's episode 7 when she puts the shoes on Stefano, like you just know this is such a big moment and kind of a humiliating thing for her, but she's also willing to do it, and they've earned that moment. And I don't even know how they did it, but that is how I felt about a lot of the show. They earned the moments that were really important, and they paid off.
Well, I think a big part of how they did it is the amount of time that they spent showing us the shoes, right? Like, I mean, the shoes got like a lot of screen time for shoes. It never felt excessive. It was, you know, like you said, everything was very deliberate, and it was always very clear why they were on screen. But like the pair of shoes that the first pair of shoes that they make, they were on screen, and her drawings of them were on screen a ton, and they were on screen in like in different contexts. Like, so you had them them on screen with Leela and Reno? Reno? What's her brother's name?
Reno.
Reno. Thank you. I don't know, man. names. There's a lot of names. So, you know, they had, we had plenty of scenes with like the two of them. You have them kind of inviting Elena into the secret. Again, like the shoes are present. So like the shoes were physically present for so much of the show. True. That I think that is probably a big part of how they managed to make sure that they still had the same impact, that like they were constantly being, you know, earmarked for the viewer that like, hey, these are important.
I want to jump back to episode 6 because it was, I think, the best episode, and I had a very emotional reaction to that episode as well. And I think that they are, so part of what you get right at the beginning of the book is Lainu talking about the violence of the episode or of the story in that very casual way. But the entire thing is that there are so many ways to die, basically, when you're poor and in this neighborhood. And it's one of the only ways that she knows how to escape the neighborhood. And so this idea of escaping the neighborhood is very important to the story and to her. And we, by the time we get to the end, one of the last things that her narration tells us is that she realizes that Leela, in all of her brilliancy and everything that she has going for her, is still mired in the neighborhood. She hasn't managed to escape. So I loved seeing that any time that Lainu left, you know, when she was on the island and when she was going to the beach, she even looked physically better. She looked healthier. She was like glowing that entire time that she was on the island. And that was such a great like physical representation of what the story says a lot. And it's that Lainu does better when she is away, when she's apart from the neighborhood, when she leaves Leela behind, basically. And Leela is, you know, in the grittiness of the neighborhood. She's very much stuck there, whether, you know, by her choice or not, which most of it wasn't. There's something very tied up for her and that character in the neighborhood. So I loved seeing her just kind of come out of her shell and really glow. But of course, you know, the kick in the feels is that she gets sexually assaulted while she's there by her crush's father, no less, and that entire scene of her having her just stare dead ahead, and the way that they shot it very, very tightly. It was a very close and narrow shot so that everything is not shown to us explicitly. It's more intimated by her reaction and like the short movements that we can kind of see, but it is a very, I mean, gut-wrenching, like awful, awful scene that is a very impactful, and you get why it impacts her the way that it does, especially as after she was like on this high, like she's going up, she's getting better, she's coming out of her shell. And then this happens to her, and it's a total, you know, it's sexual assault. So it is what it is. So
the very claustrophobic way that it was shot was like fantastic. I feel weird because like it was painful and gut-wrenching, and right. I'm like, I don't know. But like it was a very effective way to shoot that and make it not feel gratuitous and instead like you know, gross and painful, which is what it was. So that was very well done. And I think also to Max's point about like the settings of the island episode and also everything that you were saying about like her getting out, I think one of the other things that is great about that episode is that while I think it is the best like single episode, it also highlights the smallness and the confines of the other episodes. Like I think the other episodes are better for it, that you become, I think, more acutely aware of how constrained the setting is for the bulk of the rest of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a few moments like that really took me back and was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, it did such a good job at making you feel like this neighborhood is their whole world. And then there were little moments where you saw outside of that, like I think it's episode 3 maybe, when or 4, when Lainu and her father go out for the day and she sees the ocean for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I just enjoyed that experience, just watching them out in the city. And there were other moments when the kids leave the neighborhood and you know, see the wider world. They have, you know, conflict with kind of the wealthier people their age, and then they have good moments too where they're just like enjoying ice cream. And there's those little things that kind of I think, remind you and show them when they have these conversations about being the better generation, like that there's more to their world than this little neighborhood and the violence and all the drama that they're stuck in. But one thing that I wanted to come back to was about the idea that when Lainu is away, she thrives and, you know, she comes back from that island and everyone, almost all the comments right away are like, oh, look how beautiful you are. How pretty. Like all the guys mm-hmm. that kind of run it, she runs into when she's walking back with her suitcase, say that. And then as that episode goes on, she gets like acne again and she has to get glasses. And she just kind of returns to this, you know, as she self-identifies as kind of like ugly and unconfident. And I know like that's from her being kind of stuck in this neighborhood. I think that's sort of a manifestation of that idea. But also there was a lot of moments, and I don't have any particularly called out, but a lot of moments where it shows like Lainu thriving and then it'll cut to like Leela and she's not doing well. Or they compare her to Melina, which I don't think, now that I'm thinking about it, is a coincidence that their names are so similar. Melina being the mother of Pasquale, who's kind of, I don't know what you would call her, but like she's lovelorn over Donato and like she's clearly has some sort of like mental health issues. And she kind of represents like that helpless woman that these girls see themselves becoming if they don't get themselves out of the situation. And there was a lot of times where their outfits were very similar in between Melina and Leela. And there was even a scene where Lainu tells her that she's going to go to the island of, for the summer at the end of episode 5. And then like immediately it cuts to Melina, like lost and kind of wandering around the neighborhood, like confused. And I just noticed that comparison, like without, I think we forget sometimes, even though Leela is pretty tough and strong, like she also relies on this relationship with her friend. And when she's not, even though she quote unquote thrives in the city, like she knows how to take advantage of what's around her, she also needs that support system of her friend to like not be lost at sea. And I thought that was a really beautiful and interesting visual, because in the book it's told to you, but it's also always through Lainu's eyes. So it was interesting to see it kind of played out.
A big portion of, I think, what makes the books and what gave me the most like back and forth feelings was this idea of Lainu versus Leela and their relationship and the back and forth they go through and the ways that they see each other, not as competition, but, you know, there's some competition that exists because of the two different paths that they're on and the way that sometimes they hurt each other, either knowingly, like when, you know, Leela tries to get Lainu to go out and like skip school almost on purpose to get her thrown out of school, or not on purpose, where somebody will just compare Lainu to Leela and it hurts her, you know, and it happens constantly. So I think a good thing that this show did, and it goes back to what Nicole was saying about almost getting out of Lainu's head a little bit, was that it gave me feelings for both of them, and I got to see both of their sides more than I did with the book, where for a long time I struggled with Leela and all of her actions. And that's true for other characters. Like I felt for Lainu's mom a lot in this too.
Yeah,
and yeah. I, you know, she's hard on Lainu, but there was something about seeing it and being out of her head that really made me understand the plight of all of them in this neighborhood, and the way that poverty, you know, is touching them all and affecting all of them, and the way that these families that have, you know, gotten rich off of post-war like black market dealings, the way that they're taking advantage almost, or whatever it is that's happening in the neighborhood, all of that stuff was better experienced for me in the visual medium.
Leela especially is like, I mean, the actress who, there's a lot of really fantastic acting on this show, but the actress who played her was just like magnetic. And I think something that I lamented when we were reading the book was that I was frustrated sometimes by feeling like Elena was just too obsessed with her friend in this way that I was like, I'm not getting what's going on here. Whereas, but like on screen, I was like, I get why you'd be obsessed with this girl. Like, yeah.
So is everyone else.
Yeah.
I think I started a list at one point of literally in notes I was taking like guys who like Leela, right. And I just like literally listed like six different people, right. Because I think it's said in the show, but you kind of read it as maybe more of Lainu's not pettiness, but you know, girlhood jealousy. Like,
yes.
All these guys like her and not me.
Yes.
Jealousy
but
and
really
insecurity,
do.
Too. Not yeah. even just that. So, like, even, you know, jealousy, but, you know, a degree to which she's projecting it because of her own insecurities, whatever. Like, all of those things, which, again, is just a really interesting difference between the book experience versus the show experience. But, like, yes, 100%. Seeing it on screen, you're like, yeah, everyone's obsessed with her. Like, and I get it. And I get why.
I think the example of that was the episode with the party, the first party with the, I don't think it was the fireworks party. It was the one where
the birthday party,
and like when they're dancing, exactly. I think that's the first instance of the show where you kind of, up until that point, you've seen why Elena is obsessed with her best friend, but that's when you kind of see how magnetic Leela is in the neighborhood, and she's dancing with all of these guys, but not like, but for herself. I think that's why she's so attractive to other people, is because she is doing these things for herself. She's not dancing with this guy to dance with the guy. She's dancing because she loves to dance, and he's like a means to her dancing, and she just like uses them to have a good time and like release kind of some of those constraints of the neighborhood in that moment, even though it's very brief. I thought that was a great scene that really kind of ignited like what we see later on as she grows and kind of uses her power in this really interesting way.
There's this great article that I read that was an interview with the four actresses, so the two that play Lainu and the two that play Leela. I will find it and I will link it in the show notes that will be up on Snark Squad. But it's great because it was all done through a translator, obviously, and they talk a little bit about the casting process, because all of these actors, I think Gaia, who plays teenage Leela, is the only one who had any acting experience at all before they came into this. So they knew they wanted to cast unknowns. They knew they wanted to cast people that were from Naples to give it that, you know, feeling of authenticity. And so they went about the casting process by looking for children and teens who had characteristics and attributes that matched the characters. So they, part of the process was asking them questions about themselves and where they saw themselves in the future and how they viewed themselves to pair these children who felt like they match with the characters. So you see the interviewee as she's asking questions. She talks about how the two Lainus are very quiet. You know, they got those big green eyes and they're very whatever. And then the two like Leelas are over there like, bah! You know, just like attracting all the attention. Yeah, little fireballs. And at one point she asks Gaia, who's your favorite actress? And she says, myself.
Oh my God. I love it.
She is Leela.
She is Leela, 100%.
That's awesome.
My heart. Well,
they did a great job casting. I was thinking about that in terms of, there was one part, and I don't even remember, I wrote this down in my notes. There's a scene in episode 5 where Leela falls down, and I can't even remember in what context, but I put like, feels very unscripted and natural, like her reaction in the way she just, oh, it's when they're walking around the like out, they're getting ice cream and all the teens are walking around.
Oh,
I
yes.
think, and she like slips and falls, and it's like a giggly moment where they're just like laughing together, like, oh, my friend fell, and all the girls kind of like laugh. And it just watching that, I was like, oh, that is so, just looks like a slice of life. Like that isn't scripted. That's, maybe it wasn't scripted, I don't know, but it just felt very honest and like real, which I loved. And that's kind of how it felt throughout the whole series. But one thing I was thinking about is, it's hard for, you know, because we already have one step removed for not speaking the language that they're speaking. I wonder like how natural that acting felt to people who do speak the language that they're speaking
right.
in. But also I read an article, and I'll try to find it so you guys can link it if I can, but about how even outside of like 10 miles around like Naples, most people watching the show like wouldn't understand a lot of what they're saying because they do speak in dialect, which in the book she just mentions like, and this was said in dialect, but in the show they're actually speaking in the dialect. So apparently from this article I read, so it'd be interesting, you know, it's just an interesting, I don't even know, perspective to watch the show through, because like you were saying, they feel so real to the characters, and that's a really fascinating way to cast people, is to kind of ask them about themselves rather than about the character.
That's really interesting, but it makes a lot of sense too when you're dealing with child actors like that. And like I get why they did that, and I think it clearly paid off as a choice. So
I think it's easy to say that Leela and Gaia's performance was the outstanding one here, and I think it was, but I think that in a lot of ways it's because she gets to do a little bit more.
Absolutely.
in Lainu's case, like, she is so, and it's true even in the book, like, there's something very fuzzy and undetermined about her, and she doesn't know who she is. And she says it herself, Leela is firm in everything that she does, and she has no idea what she wants to do. She has no idea what she feels half the time. And she has that kind of fuzzy performance there too, right? Where you get, like, her in the background, her silently crying, and I'm like, yes, girl, me too. but Leela has more of an opportunity to, you know, pull the knife on the Solaras and, like, yell, and she's really asserting her place in that very firm manner, and the performance just matches, and it was wonderfully done.
There are a few moments, though, and I really I don't know if this is a matter of seeing it or the acting, which I think was great, but there are a few moments later on in the series as Elena kind of comes into her own as the smart one and kind of the one that seems to have a bright future ahead of her just based on her circumstances, where people even much older than her ask her opinion on things, about the shoes, about whether she should, I think, even get married, about the wedding dress, that whole scene where she convinces the wedding dress. I remember reading it in the book, but seeing it come to life and seeing how much power this, like, 15, 16 year old girl has was really well done. And she did a great job delivering that to, you know, exemplify, I think, and project forward, like, what Elena's character is going to become in the later series, kind of with her hold she has over people that she doesn't necessarily fully know that she has and is just kind of learning. And Leela's is very much challenged by, or kind of conflicted about that, because she thinks it's manipulative and everything, but everything Leela does is pretty manipulative. It's just at least more, I don't know if that's contradictory, but more direct. She's just pretty bold and gets what she wants, whereas Elena's starting to do that, but by her intellect and by her words. Is there anything you guys didn't like about the show?
My biggest complaint is a really petty and stupid one. That fucking suitcase was empty. There was no effort whatsoever to make that suitcase look not empty, and it drove me fucking nuts. The perfect episode 6 was marred only by any time she picked up the suitcase.
Maybe she just didn't have a lot of possessions, you know? She wasn't wealthy.
She was flinging around that suitcase one-handed. drove That's me hilarious. Nuts. It's like people with cups on TV shows also, it, like, yes. jostle them Gilmore around Girls. In ways where you're just like, there's nothing in there. It's very annoying. I also...
That's like Gilmore Girls with coffee cups. Yeah. They, like, always have no coffee in them, and you're just like, why? Why can't you just put something water? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's way more pronounced on a show like Gilmore Girls, where they're constantly having coffee, but this is like every show ever does this, and it's annoying every time it ever happens. The other thing, I took a lot more notes about episode 1 than I did about anything else, because I started out like, I'm gonna take all the notes, and then I kind of gave up. But episode 1 was really interesting because the beginning and end were really strong. I think the opening with the phone call was wonderful. I think the sort of ominous foreboding when they went down to retrieve the dolls was really, really well done. You're nervous for them. You're afraid for them. Like, what are they going to find down there? But the first childhood scene when they're in the classroom and Leela's reading off the blackboard, something about that didn't translate well for me. I think that was probably one of the few moments that I was like, this is kind of boring, and I don't think it's communicating everything that it's supposed to. I don't know. But that's like one of the few moments in the entire show that I have to criticize in that way. But it stands out for that reason.
My petty complaint is how slow Elena walks. She literally, there are so many scenes where it's like a pan. You could tell they're filming on like a crane, and it's slowly panning up, and she's like walking away into the neighborhood, and she walks like stiff. Like, I don't know why. I don't know. Is that how people walked in the 50s? Or like, she didn't have an iPhone to look at. I get that, like, you don't have to walk with determination, but like, she walks like she's walking in like a slow parade, and I don't understand that choice.
Pick
but you
up
know
the pace.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, come on, I know you're like kind of a wet blanket, but you don't have to walk so slow.
My complaint. I thought that I appreciated the inclusion of the voiceovers and the narration as kind of a holdover from the show, but I thought, as is the case typically when you do voiceovers, like there's always one instance where you're like, we didn't need that. And right. I think that there were moments of that, like when she goes and sees the sea for the first time, you see her look of like, wow, it's the sea. And then the narration is like, it was the first time I saw the sea. And I'm like, ah, come on. we got that without you. So I didn't hate it overall. I appreciated the voiceover, but there were times that I just thought we didn't need it at all.
The sea one is an especially good example given like how much we have on this like podcast episode already talked about the visual language of the show and how clear it is that when you are in the neighborhood, you have like there are walls around you always, right? Like even like, you know, they're in the street and like the roads are narrow, like there's always like, you know, walls and stuff around you. And so that shot of the sea is like the first truly open shot like in the whole show, really. And so, yeah, it's like there are so many other things signaling and communicating that to the audience that just like, we get it. It's the first time she saw the fucking sea. Like,
also, can we just talk about how teenage Nino is like an Italian Timothy Chalamet?
Yes.
Like, I couldn't stop thinking like Lady Bird, Lady Bird, Lady Bird. He is like literally Timothy Chalamet in Lady Bird, with like reading his book and like smoking cigarettes and being too cool and like not really looking the part, like compared to all the other teenage boys. I feel like he stands out as more like modern looking. I don't know if that's intentional, but it just like couldn't help but watch it and just see Timothy Chalamet.
He would definitely be the one, if I were like, you know, 15 and watching this show, like 100% he would have been like the like crush material.
You had a poster in your bedroom. I guess that's a good point, because like he's supposed to be the guy that like girls swoon over, but I just was like thinking Lady Bird the
entire
time.
His picture in the credits, like there's a lot of, you know, like big like face shots, and his is like an off center looking down like walking
dramatic
down the
yeah. mm-hmm.
it makes sense too that he looks so different than the guys from the neighborhood, because you know he left and he's
yeah, that's
right.
true.
He stands right. apart in the story and to Lainu in the story, that you know he's just yeah you know I have so many feelings about
different.
Him that we can't talk about.
I know.
Sorry.
Every time he came on, I was like, I want to ship. I wrote in my notes, I hate that I ship him and Lainu. Uh-huh. But so does Nella, the woman that she like stays with on the island.
Yes.
She like basically tries to like get them to like meet up. But yes, knowing
she
all of the
hardcore.
Emotional, knowing all the baggage that comes with the later books.
Oh,
in the series,
don't tell me.
I know. I'm sorry.
No.
I don't know. I mean, you definitely get that. The wedding episode, he is in love with or fascinated with. And he even says in one of the earlier
yes,
episodes, right?
Or
in the book, like, I wanted to be, like, in a relationship with the three of you, or the two of you. Like, he didn't really get how that worked when he was a kid, and he liked both of them, but, like, he really liked Leela. So, I mean, that's not, like, that's obvious. But the details of what is to come, I will, you know, save for the next discussion.
You're the worst.
Sorry about it. Now you just have to read. After we had our last discussion on the book, I definitely reread book two, and I'm going to be reading book three soon, because you guys have unleashed the monster again, and I can't stop reading them. I don't know. There was a lot. I think a lot of themes came out really well with Leela's defense of women. She defends Melina in the early episodes when they're teenagers, or when they're little kids, and then like with when Ada gets taken in the car, obviously to like be raped, which is like was way more intense in the show than I remember reading in the book.
Right.
She defends her, basically saying like she didn't have a choice. She was like, they were like, why'd she get in the car? And she's like, she didn't really have much of a choice. They basically coerced her into it.
We just watched her get abducted. Like she,
right.
she flat out says
literally.
This. Yes.
Yep. I thought that was really fascinating. There's a few times where she defends women, and also she defends her friend, obviously, with the razor blade, and she protects them from. But then there's a reversal where. Later in the series, when Donato comes back and like tries to see Lainu and is like, I love you. And I was like, so creepy, where it's like Lena's turn to like protect the little girls and like protect Melina from Donato. And I thought that was really great kind of character growth, where she sees how vast the world is and how much violence there is, not only in their neighborhood, but outside of it. And she's like, it's my time to step up and do something. I really liked her growth. I think Leela's growth is not as present in the show. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's kind of just the nature of the story, but I really enjoyed Elena's character growth throughout the series.
It's interesting too to have the juxtaposition of watching Leela do that stuff and then like you see, you know, Elena kind of stepping into that role later, because even in between there we have, you have the narration telling us a thing that's in the book, but like Elena's sense of, in Leela's absence, like feeling herself becoming what Leela would have been in certain moments, and like relying on that as a sort of source of inner strength, I guess, you know, which like ultimately it's her. She's the one who's doing the things that she's doing. She's the one who's making the choices that she's making. But I think it's interesting that the, like that the show included that like rather explicit point. Part of how she understood her own coming of age was that it was like adopting parts of Leela into herself in certain ways. So having that like early on, seeing Leela be the one to stick up for the women of the neighborhood, and watching Elena hear it and be like, oh, you're right, I definitely didn't think about that, because like I, you know, have the attitudes that like of the neighborhood, but I'm hearing you say this and you're right. And then later when given the opportunity to do the same, she does.
One of the shout outs that I want to give, that we've touched on portions of this, but I just wanted to specifically talk about when the Saratoris are moving out and Melina is wailing and throwing things out of the window, and seeing just small Lainu watch that and cry, I thought was one of the more emotional scenes of the entire show. I don't know what it was about, like just hearing Melina but watching Lainu cry and process it, framing it that way, especially when you, as you continue to watch and you really understand Melina kind of representing the like lost, lovelorn woman stuck in the neighborhood. Just that moment was very, very impactful and super special. And I think one of the things in the early episode that even while I was like, okay, this is kind of slow, seeing that gave me hope for like, okay, they're doing things. This will get better. You know, they're capturing something here.
Yeah, that's how I felt too about the moment when Pasquale's dad gets taken away for allegedly murdering Don Achille, and the wife, I don't think she even has a name in the show, but I can't remember off the top of my head. She's like running after them and then falls and like completely like wipes out. And it was just like, I think with the score and everything and like the silent, like no one was talking, it was such an intense moment and so much emotion captured in something that like, I feel like is something you've probably seen before, a moment like that. But somehow the way they captured it with like that one long shot of her running was just really powerful. Was there anything in the show, because I had this experience, that you saw totally differently, even though it followed exactly what the book said, you viewed it in a different light? Because for me, one thing I didn't think about in the show or in the book was that maybe Pasquale's dad didn't kill Don Achille, or if he did, it wasn't on his own accord. They made it pretty, in my opinion, in the show, they made it seem like it was the mom, the Solara's mom, like had something to do with it. And Leela or Lainu, I don't remember which one, kind of sees that sort of smirk she has when he gets carted away. And I don't know if it's mentioned in the book or if it's just kind of alluded to, but I didn't really ever read it as like, oh, he was either a pawn for them or he just was innocent and framed. But I just felt a lot more sympathy in that moment for him, because I thought, oh, even if he did do this, I don't know if it was on his own, from his own will, that he would do this. And that was really interesting, because I thought I had known kind of the events of the book so well, but this one made me stop and think like, oh, am I misinterpreting it, or are they changing things? Either way, I found it really kind of fascinating.
I think they set up that moment very well too, kind of early on, where you see, I forget his daughter's name, but she's walking out of school and one of the other little girls tells her, like, your dad's there waiting for you. And he has that big, like, he lashes out at Don Achille and starts yelling. So you really understand like his, like in very short amount of time, where he's coming from and his emotional plight. And so kind of framing it that way, I thought was, it gives you more to understand a little bit. And the payoff I thought was really great too. And just framing it with, you know, the Mrs. Solara, whatever her name is, kind of watching and understanding that there's an opportunity here, almost like that's a good pawn, you know, in whatever game she's playing.
Yeah.
I thought that was super interesting. And all of that is stuff that you can't get from the book necessarily, because you're not watching it go down in quite that way. But most of the moments that I had that I was like, oh, that's not how I'd interpret it, really, when we're all around Leela and her her actions and her intentions. I think I read her more maliciously than the show portrayed her. And there were a lot of times, like, even when she was, like, reading something that Lainu wrote and was like, I don't want to read this because it hurts me. Like, that's something that I would have taken more malicious on her part. But I think that everything that really challenged my first interpretation of the story was around giving a little more leeway and more sympathy to Leela.
It's funny because that stuff feels, I don't know, affirming to me, to the way that I read the book. Like, I think, like, that was part of my struggle with it, because there were times where, you know, we're, like, we're getting Elena's perspective and like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I could feel that. I it made sense to me, the moments like that, you know, like why that's, like, hard and painful for Leela. But obviously in the book, you're experiencing that, how Elena experiences that, which is like, damn, I, like, wanted to share this thing with my friend and she doesn't want me to do that. And, you know, whatever. For me, it wasn't so much that it was different in any way, but I definitely loved getting to just the fact that all of the characters got to have a little bit more agency in the story, in the adaptation, I think was really nice to see.
Yeah. One thing I never fully not understood, but kind of interpreted the same way as I saw it in the show, was the whole teacher, like, her, everything the teacher did and how she, like, rejected the wedding invitation and her anger directed at Leela, but really about kind of just their plight. I understood it a lot more seeing it. Like, she's just trying to help these girls not have the life that they're probably destined to have, and she's frustrated at the system that they're in that doesn't allow Leela to take advantage of her skills that she obviously possesses from a young age. And even in the things that she tells Lainu, like, tell her you're studying Greek and Latin, like, in the book I read that as, like, her being kind of, like, petty and, like, rubbing in her face, but I think it was more like, hey, tell her this so she can be motivated to do it on her own, because I know she will when she finds out, like, you're studying these advanced topics. I thought seeing that was really interesting. And even though some of the script is, like, word for word what is said and done in the book, it was just, I saw it in a totally different light.
I don't know. I still think the teacher is being petty. I'm not down to give the teacher any redemption, because I think you're right in that it's, like, what her sort of motivations are, and that, like, what upsets her about Leela's situation. But she also seems to, like, really clearly hold it against Leela, like, hold Leela's circumstances against her. And I think that it is a worthwhile character choice. I think that it makes a lot of sense to include a character like that in the story, but also fuck her.
I mean, and that's how I feel about a lot of the Leela stuff. Like, yeah, I understand why certain things that Lainu's doing would hurt you, but also Lainu does a lot of stuff for Leela. Lainu really is, goes out on a limb and really is invested in her as a person and tries to help her a lot. That doesn't always get reciprocated. So there, as much as it can be like, it really sucks the situation that Leela is in, you know, there's a lot of times that she's also acting in a way where you're like, okay, that also sucks. So I think it's the same thing for the teacher, where she sees, okay, that really sucks, the situation that Leela's in, but she's obviously holding it against her. And I think part of it is, you know, petty, and I think part of it is her trying to encourage a break between Lainu and Leela and, like, keep them separate and to constantly remind her, like, don't get married young. This is not, I don't know who this girl is handing me an invitation, but I don't want it. So it's like a constant, like, tap, tap, tap on Lainu that she doesn't need to be that way.
Well, on that note, we will tap, tap, tap out of this episode. Thank you so much to Max for joining us again to talk about My Brilliant Friend. Thank you to all of you for listening. We would love to hear all of your thoughts on My Brilliant Friend and this episode. You can consider joining our community on Patreon, where we've got a bunch of polls and bonus content and fun stuff like that, which you can find out more about at patreon.com/snarksquad. You can also go to snarksquad.com, where we will have a post dedicated to this episode, and you can find links to all of the different things that we mentioned in this episode. Or you can find us on Twitter at @snark_squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And you can find me at Well Done Books.
Thank you, as always, to Stefan Chin for the delightful theme music that is playing us out right now. And we will be back in your podcast feed next week. Bye.
Bye.